RadioSt.Pete.com is live from the St. Pete Yacht Club, the Suncoast Tiger Bay Club Luncheon, a District 2 City Council Candidates Forum. At the podium is the president of the Suncoast Tiger Bay Club, Todd Jennings, to introduce our program today.
Today's Tiger Timer is board member and past president Corey Adler. Just as a reminder, the full rules for the Fang and Claw question session are on your tables. Please review the review prior to the Q&A session. As a reminder, only members and young Tigers may ask questions. You have 45 seconds to frame your question, no exceptions, and you may only ask a single question, no speeches, please. Wait for the microphone and then state your name clearly before asking your question. Rating the Fang and Claw questions today are several board members in the audience: Helen Riley, Harvey Landris, Betty Morgenstein, Sue Landris, and Marilyn Miller. At this time, I'd like to ask our moderator, Mitch Perry of Florida Politics, to come forward and get our program started.
All right, thank you, Todd. All righty, good afternoon, everybody. I'm Mitch Perry, thrilled to be here. You know, this debate, of course, was originally scheduled before Hurricane Irma last month. It was scheduled so far away, long ago, I was still working at stpetersblog.com, actually. But actually, I really don't understand why the event was canceled. I mean, Jack Latvala had an event fundraiser that night. I don't understand why we couldn't have the debate. But anyway, this is actually not my first time. It is my first time moderating Tampa Tiger Bay debate. I did participate as a speaker one time at the Tampa Tiger Bay in December of 2008 after Barack Obama won the presidency and the Democrats won the House and Senate. And I predicted that speech there. I said this would be a wave of progressivism that would sweep the nation. Now, you might recall that the House of Representatives went, 63 seats went to the Republicans in 2010, 19 states went to the governors, switched from Democrat to Republican, and 650 seats in state legislators went to Republicans. I haven't been invited back until today, so that was 9 years ago. But anyway, all right, enough about me. This is District 2, of course, which encompasses the Gateway/Gandy north side of St. Petersburg. It's been a decade since we've seen someone other than Jim Kennedy leading the district. Kennedy was selected to replace the late John Brynan in 2007, then won election in 2009, and again in 2013. So I'm going to make sure, I'm going to give an introduction to the candidates. Brady Gabbert, to my immediate left here. She's been actively involved in her community ever since she and her family relocated to St. Petersburg over 13 years ago. A successful real estate broker with Smith & Associates, she has served for over a decade in leadership with the state, local, and national real estate associations. Most notably, she was chairman of the board of the Pinellas Realtors Organization in 2014 and was awarded Realtor of the Year in 2015. Testifying before the governor of Florida and the cabinet in 2013 regarding the effects of flood insurance affordability led her to her current position as vice chair of the National Association of Realtors Insurance Committee. Locally, Brandy serves as vice president of the Berkeley Estates Homeowners Association. She's a member of the City of St. Petersburg Program for Public Information Task Force on Flood Insurance and is involved with the St. Petersburg Chamber of Commerce, serving on both the Public Policy Committee and their Transportation Task Force. Barclay Harless is a fifth-generation Floridian. Barclay has been involved in the public, private, and not-for-profit sectors. After graduating from USF in 2010 with a bachelor's in history, he went to work in the Midtown area of St. Petersburg for State Representative Daryl Roussan during the height of the economic recession. He served on the board of the R Club Child Care, Inc. and the Louise Graham Center for Regeneration for 3.5 years. Barclay has been the state policy chair in the St. Petersburg Area Chamber of Commerce and has served on grant boards of the Suncoast United Way. He was appointed to the Pinellas Charter Review Commission in 2015 and sponsored a county amendment that stipulated citizen-drawn redistricting for the county commission. Okay, so we're gonna begin. What will happen now, we'll have opening statements. I will ask questions for roughly 15 to 20 minutes, and then you, the audience, will get your crack at the candidates here. So if we could have opening statements. I think your microphone there should be working.
Well, hello, everyone. Thank you all so much for coming out today. I am Brandy Gabbert, and I am candidate for St. Pete City Council District 2. I want to work very hard in this seat and represent exactly what I am. I'm a small business person in our community. I'm a mother raising a child in our community. And the future of our community is very important to me, personally, and to the voters in which I would be representing. I have a deep commitment to fight for public safety, to make sure that we are working on affordable housing solutions that will work across all sections of our city, and also economic development that does not just focus on downtown. Yeah, I'm a realtor. You know, Mitch went on about, you know, a lot of my accolades as a realtor. But what I want to make sure that I share with you today is my deep commitment to community service. My ties to community service go back to about 2009, 2010, when I served on a group with the Community Housing Solutions that was called the Veterans Reintegration Project. It was one of my first kind of outlets into community service and really started to find my passion for giving back to others, and those are the most vulnerable in our community. I am vice president of my neighborhood association, very connected to the associations and the neighborhoods, and I have had the honor of serving with the chamber and on a city task force that actually gives a lot of benefits to all of our citizens, and I hope we'll get to talk a little bit more about that. So I'm Brandi Gabbard. I look forward to answering all of your questions today. And here's Barclay Harless.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming. My name is Barclay Harless. As Mitch said, I'm a fifth generation Floridian. I went to school at USF. My dad's name is Rick, and I assure you he's not running for mayor of St. Petersburg, Florida. This election is an important one. And Mitch gave you a lot of my background. I want to stress a few things. I've been involved in Art Club Child Care and other organizations where I have a fiduciary responsibility. I look at budgets as my day job as a community banker. I look at risk. I evaluate. I look at where we're headed. That's important. Our community and our city is at a nexus point. We've got a lot of challenges, but we've also got a lot of opportunities. We have sewage. We have the Rays. We have Tropicana. We have a lot of challenges, and we have financial risk. If you saw what happened over in Tampa, you should be concerned, because I am. They're raising their property taxes by a sizable amount because the finance department, the mayor, and the city council all forgot that they had a loan coming due. And we shouldn't have that here in St. Pete. We've also got a lot of opportunities. We're going to have 85 acres of unique urban landscape that we get to redevelop for our future. In addition to that, almost 30% of our city workforce over the next decade is scheduled to retire. We're going to have a whole generation of young people getting involved in city government. It's important that millennials have a seat at the table. Millennials are our teachers, our police officers, and our small business owners. I'm running to be the small business city councilman. I'm focused on permitting. I'm focused on what affects everyday folks in St. Petersburg. I have not used my influence and my experience in the banking community to get a good position for my political run. All of my community involvement has been in things that have nothing to do with my banking experience. My website is voteharless.com. Please come up and introduce yourself afterwards, and I look forward to your questions. Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, so questions. Barclay, I'm going to start with you first, and then Brandi. The city of St. Petersburg, under the Chrisman administration, is aiming to begin a $15 an hour living wage for all workers completing city contracted services and projects by 2018-2019. What say you to this proposal?
The proposal that I saw was for did not affect small businesses, and I know that we're working with the chamber currently. I'm in support of this idea. I believe in demand-side economics. When average folks get money, they spend it. Being in a banking, I can tell you that is exactly what happens. People spend their money. That's what creates jobs. Businesses don't open up because somebody has a tax cut. They open up because they know that they're going to have customers to sell to. So I'm in favor of this. You know, C1 Bank had a $15 minimum wage. It was one of the things that attracted me to working at that bank because they cared about their community. They were involved in it. So I think if it's done in a financially responsible way, if it's done where it does not affect small businesses, and if it's done where we budget ahead of time, I'm in full agreement with it.
So the question is specific to the ordinance that is being discussed by City Council right now. And the ordinance, they had some great discussion yesterday in committee and have actually come to starting at $12 an hour and then working up to $13. And that is for any contract that is $100,000 or more that the city hires an independent contractor for. So that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about something that will affect small business at this point in time. I have had many conversations, not only through the chamber, but with Carl Nurse, about this particular ordinance. I am in favor of a living wage. I want to see us do more and work even more towards the poverty levels in St. Petersburg. The only hesitation I really have is how we make sure that those contractors are actually, you know, trying to incentivize and hire people who are from St. Petersburg, so that that money, when it is given to those employees, it actually stays within St. Petersburg and helps to grow our local economy. But other than that, I am in complete favor of a living wage.
Okay, Brandy, for you. And what have some have dubbed a historic vote? The St. Petersburg City Council earlier this month voted on an ordinance that caps donations to political action committees involved in local elections at $5,000 a year. The measure also requires more enhanced disclosures about the donors. This despite the fact that it's opposed by the city attorney's office, which argues that it is unconstitutional and would expose the city to millions in liabilities if defeated in the courts. Originally, both of you were against it, but Brandy, you said last Saturday you now support it. Explain your conversion, and then Barclay, of course, tell me why you remain opposed to it.
So to be clear, I didn't say I support it. I said that had I been sitting on the dais that day, there was very compelling argument, and I probably could have been swayed as well. So that was my quote, to be clear. You know, my opponent had raised a conversation about, you know, a commitment to not taking PAC funds. And so I want to be very clear that I myself don't have a PAC either. I have not taken any contribution over the $1,000 legal limit either, because it's not legal to do so. If any PAC out there that has supported me, the police, the fire, the realtors, if they were to ever do anything in behalf of the message of my campaign in a negative way, I would rebuke that. I don't believe in, you know, using anything as a PAC donation to do anything other than spreading a message. So any challenge that was given that was maybe said that I ignored, I did not ignore it. I am working on a very positive, issue-driven campaign, and that is where I stand on the PAC.
Brady, if I could...
Absolutely.
Okay, so you said you heard the arguments at the city council last week, and if you were on the council, you probably would have voted for it.
I could have been swayed.
You could have been swayed.
My concern with the actual ordinance itself is the legal ramifications of it. We have a lot of things to pay for in this city, and the thought of, you know, us potentially having $2-4 million lawsuits that could come out of this, I don't see where that is prudent of our taxpayer dollars to actually be spending it to fight a fight that honestly has been lost in many other communities in the past. So as a good steward of taxpayer dollars, that would, you know, be my number one concern. So I can't say 100% that I would have changed my vote on that dais, but I definitely respect the members of our community who came out. It was a really great showing of activism, and anytime that people want to get engaged in a conversation within our city, I think it's a good thing. And, you know, like I said, they had some compelling arguments.
Okay. Bart.
I think this is an extremely important issue because, as you heard from David Jolly and Patrick Murphy, what's going on in Washington and Tallahassee is disgusting with money. The ordinance is passed. It should be fully enforced and fully defended. Let me say, this is such a clear difference between my opponent and I. I've just seen two realtor pack mail pieces that have hit. These are pieces that are coming from outside our community. Whenever I get a piece, I look at whose picture's on it and who paid for it, because they affect all of us. And I think this is a clear difference. We don't know how many tens of thousands of dollars of outside money is coming in. The exact pledge I offered to Brandy, and I'd still be glad to have your acceptance, is that I will not have a PAC, and I will not have a PAC act on my behalf. I want to keep spending in check and not be beholden to anybody. It goes right to the integrity of government, and it goes right to the independence of city council. And so this is really important. You know, we've run the numbers as of last report. For Brandy's campaign, 55% of her donations have come from realtors or people involved in real estate. That's a huge number. If you look at my donations, they come from across the spectrum of this community. They come from small business owners. They come from all kinds of folks, the LGBTQ community. That's who I'm going to represent. That's who I'm going to work for. This pledge, this isn't a pledge between Brandy and I. This is a pledge between each of us and the voters, each of us and the residents, because it affects how we serve each of you if we're elected. Thank you.
May
I?
Do you want to respond?
Absolutely. So, yes, a lot of realtors have supported me in this campaign, and I'm proud of their support. I have worked for over 10 years in really supporting them because they're small business people. Every single one of them have to go out every single day and find a way to keep a roof over their head. And so I am proud of their support. We fight for property rights. We fight for homeownership. We fight for so many issues, and I will never be ashamed of that. But one thing I want to be super clear on is my integrity would never be compromised based upon any contribution given to me. I do not feel beholden to anyone. If anything, I think that the Realtor Association leadership would tell you that I have my own mind. I stand on my own two feet. I don't always agree with everything that the realtors do. I don't walk in lockstep with them because I'm an independent thinker and I'm a game changer. And that is why they respect me and that is why they support me. Furthermore, I would just say that in Mr. Harless's, statement, if you will, about the PAC, he said, and I quote, "It keeps good people for running for office and making good decisions." Mr. Harless himself will tell you how proud he is of all the work he has done in politics over the last 10 years. He worked for a lot of people that accepted a lot of PAC donations. To me, did he not believe that those were good people who could make good decisions? That would be a question that I would have for Mr. Harless.
Barkley, do you want to respond?
Sure.
Well, they're not up on stage, Brandy. You and I are, and I think it's our commitment in this election that really matters. You know, like I said, who paid for these ads? Who stands to benefit? Why are they so invested? There's going to be a lot of issues that come before City Council over the next decade. There's going to be a lot of realtor issues. There's going to be a lot of issues. We have to have independent thinkers on there, people who are not beholden to special interests. Brandy has been very involved. She's been on the screening endorsement committee for the Realtor PAC, which is the PAC that has sent these ads out. She's very familiar with that industry, and so she's committed to their causes. I think spending has to be kept in check. This is a grave threat to our democracy. I've served in Tallahassee, and it has ruined the political process up there. We know what's happened in Washington. It should not happen in our community. This is St. Pete. Thank you.
Okay, next question. The City Council, let's talk about law and order here, crime. City Council voted back in May against spending $87,000 to install 15 dashboard cameras in newly purchased police vehicles. If you were on council, would you have voted along those lines? Barkley, up to you.
Yes, I do believe in dashboard cameras in certain circumstances. I know there's also been an experiment in putting cameras on the guns of officers, and so they're activated at certain times. I know they're experimenting with them. They haven't worked out all the kinks, so it's not a done deal. I don't think the specifics of this should be up to council. I think the idea in itself is good, that there should be a check on any sort of government entity. Let me tell you, I did a ride along a couple weeks ago with the St. Pete PD, and I showed up at the station at 7 p.m. I was there till 4 a.m. It was one of the most eye-opening nights of my life. The first time you sit in the vehicle, they point out that orange button. They say, that's the officer down button in case something happens. So I'm well aware of what our officers go through and what the issues are. But we do need to recognize that incidents happen, and we need to have a check on those officers that have that. Thank you.
So I am very honored because I am the candidate in this race that is actually endorsed by the police union and the FOP. And I am honored with their support, and from everything that I have learned from working with them throughout the last year, this is a conversation that, you know, certainly needs to be had in a broader scale. There is a lot of, you know, issues with privacy on both sides for, you know, the officer, but also for residents. So this is not a conversation that we are done with by any means. And I think that we need to just maintain open dialogue with our police. I am 100% committed to full support of our police, our fire, our first responders. I think that is your number one job as a local elected official, is to protect them the same way that they protect us. I'm committed to that, and want to, you know, continue that relationship that I have garnered over the last year with our officers once elected.
I want to ask a question about endorsements. You guys both talk about how you, on your, you know, have an extensive list of people who have endorsed your candidacy. Starting with you, Brandy, if there's one group or one individual that you're most proud of the endorsement you got.
Absolutely. So we've talked about the groups that have endorsed me, but, you know, having the endorsement of Councilwoman Amy Foster, she signed on to my campaign very early on. She is so hardworking and fair and dedicated to our community. So having her support, learning from her, you know, has really been a joy. So I think outside of, you know, the organizations that we have so much conversation about, just the friendship with her, the example that she has set, you know, that has really been a real joy for me.
Thank you.
I guess I'd have to say Jim Kennedy. He currently holds the seat. He knows exactly what the job is, and he knows this district. He knows everything that's going on. He's filled me in on so many of the financial challenges that are going to hit over the next few years. And it's important to have somebody who's reviewing those challenges. Once again, we know about what happened in Tampa. We shouldn't have those type of issues here in St. Pete. We should keep our big ticket projects on time, within budget, and on schedule. In addition to that, Jim's known, especially by the members of the media and the press, for being an honest guy. He doesn't have a cell phone on the dais. Whenever there's a public records request, there's nothing to fill out. He's not texting. He believes in ethics. And that is why, that's one of the things I really want to bring up. I want to maintain for our district the independence of the office and the integrity of the office. Thanks, Mitch.
Talk about economic development, and this is rough, okay, basically, but roughly Mayor Christman is talking about basically no chain stores on Central Avenue and Beach Drive. Good idea or not? Yeah.
I will say this. I was asked by Creative Loafing recently if I had a magic bullet, how would I solve a problem that I could just use the bullet on? And that would be, how do we keep our unique character? How do we keep our independent small businesses here in our community? I personally don't believe that the proposal is legal. I've talked there. First of all, there actually isn't a proposal out there, so I'm open-minded. I'd like to see what that is. But I've been told that some of the ideas that have been passed around the city attorney's office would not hold up the constitutional value. The sentiment behind it, though, it is real, and it's important. I love the Burg. We have a lot of organizations out here that support our local businesses. You know, that's important. Those are the businesses that create the jobs. Those are the businesses that make people want to move to St. Pete and stay here because we have a unique community. We're much better, and it's all organic. You know, there's no one developer that all these businesses circle around. It's each and every small business, the mom and pop folks, and they need a voice on city council as well. Thank you.
So this is a conversation that, you know, being a member of the chamber and an active member, we've had. And, you know, it is not, you know, technically legal to tell people that, you know, they cannot open up a business in that particular area just because they're a chain. With that being said, you know, having, you know, a business downtown and being part of the downtown, you know, vibe, we do want to keep it special. We do want to keep it unique. So seeing, you know, Burger King's or Walmart's or things like that go up on Central Avenue wouldn't be that desirable, in my opinion. And it would not keep us moving forward as the unique city that we are. You know, if it was a conversation that came back, I certainly would want to make sure that, you know, we did not pass it, but if it did get passed, how does that affect companies like Kawa, for instance? You know, they fall into that. They are technically what you would consider to be a chain, but we don't think about them that way because they're from here. They're a homegrown company. So are we now saying that we don't want to have a Kawa on Central Avenue? I think that's where unintended consequence of a lot of these kind of things happen, and that's why you need big picture, forward thinking, long term people on council that are going to look for those unintended consequences and how they can actually affect groups, you know, just like the Kawa or someone like that.
Brandy, let's talk about the hurricane, Duke Energy. How do you think they did in terms of restoring power to St. Pete homes and businesses, and what would you like to see them specifically improve upon over the next couple of years?
Well, as someone who went without power for many, many days and actually camped in my house, I don't think they did very well, just from a personal standpoint. But also talking with my neighbors and, you know, elderly people in my neighborhood who, you know, didn't even realize that Duke doesn't know that their power is out and that you have to report it. And the way that that reporting system really failed all of our residents, I think, is a shame. You know, if I have a power outage today and I report it, I get a text message saying that they got my reporting, that they're there in the neighborhood, they're working on it. And then whenever it comes back on, I get a text message saying that it's back on. None of that happened during Irma, in the aftermath of Irma. And I think that that communication breakdown was really the biggest shame of it all. Now, I also think that we need to be holding Duke accountable to making sure that those tree limbs are trimmed off of our lines. I mean, that's their responsibility, and we don't hold them accountable for that. So I think that there were a lot of missing pieces in, you know, the response from Duke specifically. I know that, you know, their agreement with the city is coming up, and, you know, we've heard in some of the forums that Councilwoman Rice has talked about, you know, we'll be having those conversations. You would ask a question, or someone had asked a question at the South St. Pete Dems about, you know, should St. Pete have their own utility? Well, if this is something that is going to come up in the next few years, my experience negotiating contracts would come in very handy when we're talking about what this is going to look like if we go down that path. You know, I have to negotiate contracts for a living and do it for the people that I serve as a client. Once elected, you would be who I would be serving, and it would be in your best interest that we would be negotiating any contracts like that. Furthermore, you know, I think that what they're doing with the $9 million that has been allocated to burying the underground power lines out in the Skyway Marina District, I think we need to keep talking about that. We need to talk about how we expand that, how we find the money to down the road. It's a big project. It's going to be really long term, 20, 30 years from now. But how do we actually start to expand that underground, you know, lines, and how do we do that as we're redeveloping?
Yes, Duke Energy. I've never seen a business operate with the speed of government, with all the greed of the worst of the private sector all at the same time. I think that we really have to work with Duke Energy, and we have to hold their feet to the fire before another one of these hurricanes hit, because they're going to hit. Climate change is an issue. It's going to be continuing to get worse. And the key question is when we renegotiate in the next 7 to 8 years, are we going to be tough? Are there going to be more incidents? Are we going to keep their feet to the fire so that this does not happen again? Look, the number one thing we can do is to make our community more resilient. We can make our, you know, make everything independent. Our police station has solar panels. It's going to have solar panels. We assume if a hurricane hits and loses power, they'll be able to maintain that via batteries. So there's a lot of long-term things we can do. One of the things I want to caution you on is lots of open-ended spending. This goes back to the same type of thing that's happening in Tampa. Brandy mentioned a few times new spending. We don't know where that money is going to come from. We have to be very careful. Every time we identify where we're going to be, it costs a lot of money to put power lines under the ground. If we're going to be doing that, what are we cutting or what taxes are we raising? I think that's an important point for every incoming city council.
And just picking up on what Brandy said, would you be into the city taking over energy itself when this contract comes up?
I don't think that's a good idea now.
Okay. Let's talk about affordable housing / workforce housing. This has been a big issue throughout this campaign because it's a big issue in St. Petersburg. Beginning with you, Barkley, what can be done to address this pressing issue?
There's a couple options, and it's affordable homes, right? It's where people live. It's people renting. It's people buying. I personally have gone through this. When I went to buy, I don't have a spouse, and so I was on a single income. And there are very few places inside the city that are affordable, even for middle-income people. It's part of the great squeeze that's happening of the middle class across the United States. So what are actionable, specific items we can do? Number one, the city does not have much money for affordable housing. And so we need to make sure if we can identify funding via Penny for Pinellas and other things, if they pass, that we have those funds and we direct them. Number two, we need to leverage city-owned property. We need to look at places such as, for instance, the land the police station currently sits on. We need to say, how can we integrate this into the wider landscape for all of our workforce? I think those 85 acres that we redeveloped at the TROP site are going to be really critical here. And I'm sure that some realtors would like to see them all developed into high-end luxury condos. But I think they should reflect our community. I think they should also keep the historical aspect of Gaslight Park and the African-American small-owned businesses that used to exist there in place. But I think workforce housing should be a part of that, because all the jobs that we're going to create, all the opportunity that's coming out downtown, anytime we build outside of downtown for workforce housing, all we're doing is impacting our infrastructure and our transportation.
Okay. This is the last question, okay. I guess, before the audience.
So to be clear, this realtor does not advocate for sky rises all over the Tropside. Absolutely not. I've been very clear in many of my statements that I've talked about the redevelopment of the Tropside as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity in a built-out community to redevelop 85 acres. And that is a huge parcel where we can have a myriad of different things on that property. And so I don't believe that there should be any sort of, you know, overdevelopment of luxury high-rises on that property. I think it does have to have an element of connection to the Midtown community, absolutely. It also needs to service all economic, spectrum. And, I've said it and I'll say it again, I think that our city could really handle a little convention center down there on that site. I think that that is going to be something that's going to be key to us moving forward as a world-class city. So that is where I stand on the Trop site specifically. Now, affordable housing, this is my wheelhouse. This is something that I have fought for 10 years. Affordable housing is not a one-size-fits-all. Anybody that tells you that there is one answer to affordable housing is absolutely wrong and doesn't understand the bigger issue. What works in Midtown is not what's going to work in District 2. And we need affordable housing and workforce housing all over our city. There are a lot of great ideas, everything from co-ops. There's some great rent-to-own kind of developments that are happening in Detroit that I think could be an interesting model. But one of the things that I think we lose sight of a lot is what the challenge is to affordable housing, especially in the Midtown community and other areas in the south side of our city. One of those issues is title and its liens on these properties. Those are two issues. I attended the candidate orientation that happened at City Hall. My opponent unfortunately wasn't able to be there, but I got some really great information from the neighborhood housing team about these sort of initiatives and what they're working on. And they see that these are our challenges, these are our issues. So before we start coming up with, well, we can drop a housing development here, or we can do this here, we need to get to the root of the problem. And the title search, the liens that are happening, those sort of things are a big piece of it. So that we need to kind of tackle first.
All right, great. Okay, time for audience questions. Looking forward to this. Okay, Joe Farrell. Realtor.
He's not a realtor.
No, he worked for the realtor organization. I'm sorry.
I work for the Pinellas Realtor Organization. Earlier in your responses, you said a lot about realtor support and what they do for candidates, and maybe not in the most positive light. A few months ago, we held a candidate screening, which you came to. I guess I would ask the question is, on that questionnaire we put out that you circled, would you accept RPAC support from the realtors? And you circled yes. What changed your mind about RPAC support and its positive or negative
reasons
since then?
Sure, that's a very good question. First of all, I believe every candidate should go to these organizations who have an impact and allow them to hear who they are so they know they're not a big bad monster. They are real people and they have real ideas. I've accepted PAC support within the legal allowable limits from a lot of organizations, but they have no more influence over anybody else. It's limited. That's the problem. Tens of thousands of dollars in spending that come from outside our community. That's the issue, Joe. It's not what you select 1,000. Excuse me?
You certainly accept and sign the paper.
Yes, but that's not tens of thousands of dollars. That's the issue. I have made a pledge not to have a PAC, not to allow a PAC to work on my behalf. It's a clear difference. Tens of thousands of dollars coming into our own community, that's what keeps people from having integrity and being independent-minded. Thank you.
Brandon, do you want to say something?
So I'm just not going to let the integrity thing go. I'm just not, because I have integrity. I have incredible integrity. And for my opponent to sit here and say that any sort of support that is legal, that a community is willing to give you, impedes your integrity, to me is a real slam. And I think that it's a slam on many of our elected officials who have done great work for us, who also have garnered the same support. My real question would be, would we be having this conversation if my opponent knew that he had organizations that were willing to support him, spread his message, and help him and believe in him the same way that organizations are willing to do for me?
Okay, we'll leave it there. Next question. Ken Welch, Commissioner Welch.
Thank you, Ken Welch. Thank you both for running. I want to
Brandy, why don't you start?
So transportation, you know, one of the first things that I want to make sure once I'm elected is that I get involved with Forward Pinellas and the Gateway Master Plan that they are going to be working on. You know, being the District 2 candidate, you know, the Gateway is the crossroads to St. Petersburg. And we have, you know, really, we see the transportation issues there, I think, more so than anywhere else. So Forward Pinellas definitely would be the, kind of the first thing that I would want to beg to be appointed to. I think it's important that we have a voice there for District 2. I believe in multimodal forms of transportation. So I, you know, we need to make sure that we're looking at everything. We need to make sure that we are, you know, keeping our sidewalks safe, that, you know, they're handicap accessible, that we have bike lanes, that we're talking about, you know, maybe even spreading the bike share a little bit more across the city. We need to think bigger, and we need to make sure that we are giving transportation options like bus rapid transit to everyone in our city.
Couple things, Ken. Number one, you know, obviously we have to work regionally. I think this is a big difference here. We cannot go it alone. Our transportation problems do not begin and end at our city limits, as everyone here is well aware. The point is, if we're not working with the other entities, if we don't have an overall regional transportation plan, it's all gonna go for naught. And we're gonna spend local money on things and no one else is gonna operate on it. Number two, our sidewalks, actually, there's a huge backlog in sidewalk funding in St. Petersburg. I think we need to focus on that. We need to follow through with that. I know Carl Nurse has been making a lot of noise about that. We also need to continue to do the Complete Streets program the city has been doing. That's, you know, bicycling and things of that nature is part of our lifestyle. It's what makes us a lifestyle city. And so all of that combined needs to be, we have to be mindful every time we build a new high rise, how much is it going to impact people driving in and driving out of the area? Because we don't want to have the horrendous transportation problems that that Tampa has right now. Thank you.
All right, anyone else? Yes, yeah.
Hi, I'm Corey Adler. I'm so glad that you're running, and I'm hearing good information about your district. But I'm interested to hear, once you're elected, what are you planning to do? What do you know about people who are struggling in South St. Pete, in the CRA, who don't have access to any of the things that you're talking about? They couldn't care less if there were a Burger King on Central Avenue. They want to feed their kids. And they could care less if, oh, 15 more seconds? yeah, wrap it up, okay. And ex-offenders, what are your plans to help people in our whole community to have better lives?
Well, my first job out of college was in Midtown, and it opened my eyes. I answered a lot of phone calls, primarily from grandmothers and mothers whose kids were cycling out of the prison system, and they were looking for jobs and having a tough time. I am for banning the box and other policies like that. I'm for helping out with the CRA, continuing that mission. I think it needs to be focused on the tax base that it comes from and not go north of Central at all. I think that's important. I think that long term, we need to focus on early learning and financial literacy. The Campbell Park Financial Literacy Center that Nikki Capehart has been working on needs to be fully implemented and fully supported. As someone who comes from the financial industry, I will tell you that is a huge barrier to employment for a lot of folks. Early learning. We have about $250,000 in the budget right now. Obviously, I sit on R Club Child Care Board, so I'm familiar with the issues. 100%, we need to double, triple, whatever it takes to help early learning. We should not be in the business of running the school system, but we should be in the business of helping where we can so that we prepare these kids for when they get into the system. Thank you.
So when you're elected, yes, you are elected to represent a district, but you are the 8 city council people that make decisions for the entire 260,000 almost people of our city. So you need to lead with that mentality. And because of how I was raised and the, you know, kind of life that I came from, I know what it's like to be poor and to, you know, oftentimes not have enough food to put on the table, because that's how I grew up. So I'm very empathetic to the needs of people in our community who are our most vulnerable. The 2020 plan and the work that has been done there and the way that that has impacted poverty levels in South St. Pete is incredible. I've done work with Pinellas Opportunity Council for many years, working with them, and kind of working on issues that help those people who don't quite qualify for assistance, but they are still struggling. So, well, I've got to stop. So that was a big question.
All right. Mr. Peter Sorsch, head of Extensive Enterprises Media.
Who you don't know at all.
You guys are both identified with a career, probably more so than other candidates, realtor and banker. So this question is bifurcated, but it's basically the same to each of you. In pop culture, what realtor or real estate movie? I'm thinking like Annette Bening. I'm thinking Family Ties or Glengarry Glen Ross. What is a movie or character from real estate that you most identify with, and or maybe one that is just abhorrent to you? And likewise, partly to you, is there a banker in pop culture on television that you idolize or you find abhorrent?
Can I go with Phil Dunphy? Okay, that's my answer. Phil Dunphy. How's that? I might drop it.
Okay,
from Modern Family.
Yeah.
There you go. He's my favorite realtor because he keeps it fun.
I think if you remember the movie It's a Wonderful Life, I think you'll remember the challenge. The challenge with the depression and the good guy. But he was a mortgage lender, and he was trying to do the best that he could during very, very difficult, challenging times. And so I don't remember the name of the character, but yes.
Thank you.
Greg Wilson.
Good question.
Works with Brandy.
As a matter of full disclosure, I'm Gregory Wilson, I do work on her campaign. And that's why I wasn't going to ask the question. But you opened up this line of questioning. I'm not going to let it pass. Reminding that you are in a room full of political animals, and to let you know I've been doing this for 35 years, whenever I hear somebody say, I'm not going to accept PAC money, it's because it wasn't being offered in the first place. Now, I know that doesn't necessarily apply to you, but you didn't begin your campaign that way. You waited until late to make that a challenge to the party. So my question is, can you see how that might seem a little disingenuous?
I appreciate the question, Greg. The fact is, it does not take away from the fact that tens of thousands of dollars are being spent in our community. I've made a pledge to the voters. I've offered everybody else at any point in time to join me in this pledge. I think it's a serious issue. I think money in politics, as I said at the League of Women Voters debate, it's a poisonous thing. It prevents good people from running and good people from going into office and good ideas from coming up. Because it doesn't just impact the election prior. It impacts the policymaking after the election occurs. And it's unfortunate because some of these PACs, they've already passed their next reporting deadline is gonna be after the election. So we can't even find out what's going on before then. I think that's important. Disclosure is important. One of the great things about our city and our individual campaigns is that we have weekly reporting. Every week, actually one's due tonight, weekly reporting. There's disclosure on spending and on who's giving the money. Thank you.
All right. Shannon, question, Shannon.
So throughout this campaign season, we see a lot of the same topics being addressed, the sewage issue, the pier issue. At one forum, they literally said, we really encourage you guys to talk about literally anything else. What topic do you guys think has happened this cycle that has not yet been discussed? And what do you think we should take action on it?
I think number one, our reserves. One of the things that was one of the most unpleasant experiences for me to witness was when I worked up in the Florida legislature from 2010 to 2013. And they were cutting because we had not saved during the good years. As a matter of fact, they'd done a lot of tax cuts during the good years instead of saving those money, the funds. So we had to fire people. They were cutting jobs. It was terrible. It was a terrible experience. I really believe both our enterprise funds and our economic stabilization fund, which we just drew from, by the way, recently, we need to focus on. We need to make sure during these good years that when the property values are going up and the property income is going up, we're adequately prepared because we don't want to ever have to arrive at that decision where we have to look at police and fire and our core services. You know, God forbid we have another hurricane come and we don't have the city workforce that we need to try and clear out the debris. Not that it was cleared out in the best manner, but it was cleared out in a very timely manner. We have to have the manpower. And, you know, it's a blessing that during all those years we were still able to provide for the pensions. Thank you.
Well, I think one of the issues that I've tried to talk about a bit, because I'm incredibly passionate about it, and it doesn't get a lot of traction until, you know, the media tends to pick up on it every 4 or 5 years, is flood insurance. Flood insurance is an issue that so dramatically impacts Pinellas County and St. Petersburg specifically, and no one talks about it until a drastic thing happens in DC and all of a sudden people are getting 400% rate increases and they're getting priced out of their homes and they can't sell their homes and our economy stops because, let's face it, 70% of the GDP is affected by real estate sales. No one wants to talk about that at any other point in time until Congress is, you know, put a reauthorization in front of them. So that is a topic that I want to talk about. I think that we need to make sure that we are very cognizant of the things that our city can do, and we're doing real things now in the city, giving 25% discounts to every person who has a flood insurance policy. I sit on that task force, and I'm committed to keep working on it going forward.
Thank you. Okay. Todd? Okay. Last question? Not yet.
Okay. Todd Jennings. Of course, being the largest city in the county, say, what happens here sometimes reverberates across the county and the region. Is there a particular area where you as a city councilman are willing to hope to use your influence to enact change, not just in the city, but across the county and region?
Well, I mean, I definitely, you know, to go back to the affordable housing conversation, that is a conversation that is happening all over our region. And I think that St. Petersburg is in a unique place to where we can really be the forward-thinking, you know, people in that arena. Carl Nurse is all considered to be the housing expert on the St. Pete Council at this point in time. When he is gone, there will be a hole in that expertise if I am not elected. That is what I bring to the table, honestly, is that expertise. And it's something that's valuable because we are built out and our entire county is built out. We have to be very smart about the way we move forward with redevelopment of our city, and that will trickle into our county, to the unincorporated areas and the other municipalities that neighbor us. And that's a strength that I bring, and it's something that I would be passionate about carrying forward.
I think transportation boards, I think if you look to District 2, you will see the Gandy overpasses that are being constructed. Large influence on that was Jim Kennedy. He sat on the MPO at the time, and there were some funds that were going to go to Miami, and he was able, through some bad things happening down there, to bring the funds up here. And I think that's important, because the Gandy impacts not just Tampa, St. Pete, and Largo, and Clearwater. It affects people coming through, and I really believe that is going to be a focus. Intergovernmental organizations, TBARTA, the transportation organizations, because that's one of the few issues that really has to be interconnected. It cannot just be something that we do alone. Some of the other issues, I think we can do a start and have a real impact on ourselves. So I think those organizations, Forward Pinellas, are the important ones. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Since it hasn't been brought up, Kelly Kirshner. Since it hasn't been brought up, in fairness, I work at college, so we have a vested interest in the topic of sewage. Conversation with candidates this session, we didn't talk about sewage. I think, Barclay, you've hammered on this point of minding the store and expenses, and you talk about if there is an entitlement program that we have that is the underinvestment that we've made collectively over decades in our infrastructure, particularly in wastewater treatment. And so that, right now, the tab is about 300 plus million, could go up to a half a billion. I was wondering if you both could just speak to, you know, the process that you're going to navigate in really assessing the situation, and then how do we finance that? Is it really on great CARES Acts and the regressive nature of that everyone plays deeply, and how do we approach that? It really is the largest financial issue that I can see right now in the city of St. Petersburg.
Yeah, Kelly, that's a great question. Number one, there is a plan in place, and there's some funding has been identified. One of the reasons we dipped into reserves is to pay for some improvements that we had to do immediately to stop any problems. Number one, long term, I would hope that we bond as much as possible for the simple reason that this is going to go to the beneficiaries of the future, and we do not want to hike because that's going to hit the middle class and the lower middle class the worst if we increase rates very, very swiftly. I'm very cognizant of that. It's unfortunate we've had a lot of other big ticket items that we bonded to recently. Number two, how do we save money? We haven't really discussed that. And one of the things that Carl Nurse did on the Tampa Bay Water Board was he said, how do we look at all the money we spend on consultants, which typically cost between 3 and 5%, five times more than having a city employee do them. How do we long-term move away from all those consulting fees and teach our city employees how to do the same job so that we can save money that we can then put in our sewage system? Because the real fight's gonna be 4 years from now or 5 years from now when the state consent order goes away. We can't slow down on the funding.
So from the very beginning of my campaign, I went and toured the Northeast Water Reclamation Facility. Got to see firsthand, really that we are not budgeting for even the tools that our operators need. I think that's a real shame, and I think that's something that we need to look at. In talking with Claude Tankersley many, many times, there's all this conversation about after the consent order is done, what do we do with Albert Whitted? And, in the past, looking at it and going, well, let's do a study that possibly would talk about reopening it. But that is just really not going to be feasible for the requirements that go into actual capacity that has to be done at these plants. And there's just no room to do it. So Albert Whitted, I think, is an opportunity that we need to look at. There's some idea about bringing it online with our stormwater treatment facility, which I think is a great idea. How we pay for it. Unfortunately, the rate increases are our next conversation that we're going to be having. I think that, the conversation about the reclaimed and, it being spread across the size of parcels and people who have the larger parcels paying more for it than people who have the smaller parcels would help with that pinch on the middle and lower class of, taxpayers. So that's something we could look
Brady,
at.
Just, so no reopening Albert Whitted or...
I mean, I don't believe that it is actually feasible with what the EPA requires for the containment, and there's just no space to do that on that land.
Right. Do you agree? What are your thoughts about that?
I disagree. I think we should do everything we can so we don't have a spill, and I know that there is a possibility with Albert Whitted, and I think that should be examined, absolutely.
May I? Just quickly, one quick thing. Had Barclay been at the candidate orientation that was done at City Hall and had this conversation with Claude Tankersley, he would know that that is in fact not true.
Okay, you can't respond.
I mean.
Well, that's been their line with the water department has been it's not true since the beginning, but there's many others that say that it is true. And I believe if we're not doing everything we can to prevent another spill, we're not doing our jobs right.
Great, thank you guys both. Okay, time for closing statements. 1 minute each. Randy, go ahead.
So I think you've heard a lot today. I'm sure you're all going to take it back and digest it. And I hope that if there were any questions that are lingering for you, that you will reach out to me. I am easily accessible. My information is on the back of those cards in front of you. And that phone number comes right to me. I believe in an open door policy. I believe that your city council are your representatives, they're your voice, and you deserve to be able to have access to them, and that is something that I promise you. So let's start today. Reach out to me, please ask me any questions that you have, and I hope that I can humbly count on your vote on November 7th. It is a citywide race, so everyone gets to vote, and if you support me, I hope you'll share with your friends. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you, Brandy, for being here. I've enjoyed this race. I look forward to it coming up to a completion on November 7th. I've been thankfully blessed, based on all my community service and involvement, to be endorsed by quite a few folks, over 40 St. Pete small businesses. My former boss, the former CFO of the state of Florida, Alex Sink, the incumbent to this office, Jim Kennedy, who is well aware of all the challenges that are going to come across the next 10 years. The SEIU, which represents our everyday city employees who worked hard after Irma to get our community back up to where it should be. And as of last week, the Tampa Bay Times. So I am fortunate to understand the role that's been played on council. This is a very nonprofit style of government. There's a lot of issues that come before city council. I will have integrity, I will be independent, and I will be an open-minded person the entire time. My name is Barclay Harless. My website is voteharless.com. Thank you so much, and please vote.
All right, thank you very much, Barclay Harless and Brady Gabbard. All right, I'd like to thank Brandy and Barclay for being here today, and thank you to Mitch for moderating. The winner of our Fang and Claw Award today is Corey Adler. Corey, you want to come on up? And with that, we'll adjourn today's luncheon. Thank you for coming out today.